Hi, this is Dr. William Renner here with Dr. Alan Safdie. Thank you for joining us on the best series of podcasts in America on wellness and longevity, in our opinion. Dr. Safdie is the past president and chairman of the Department of Gastroenterology at Deaconess Hospital, past president of the Ohio GI and Liver Institute. He has been involved in more than 35 years of evidence-based research and medicine. Today, Dr. Safdie and I are going to talk about a very exciting topic, the microbiome, healthy poop, healthy you. Dr. Safdie, can you explain the microbiome? A lot of people ask me about the microbiome. They're confused about what does it mean.
That's a good question, Bill. When I trained, you know, we didn't look at the value of a healthy poop. We looked at different diseases, but we really weren't looking at all the elements of prevention. And as we go through this podcast, and maybe a series of podcasts on the microbiome, we're going to understand that healthy poop may mean a healthy brain, maybe a decrease in immunologic diseases. So let's talk about it for a second. If we look at you, Bill, and we look at your human cells, you have about 10 trillion human cells. However, you have 100 trillion bacterial cells. So if we just look at the number of cells, you only are 90% of you is bacterial in regards to cells. Only 10% of you would be therefore human. Not all organisms or bacteria are good in our GI tract. We think of probiotics, but there's many, many hundreds of different bacteria that live in our GI tract. And as we go through this podcast, we're going to be talking about different diseases that may be more prevalent when we don't have the healthy bacteria within our GI tract, how to get healthier bacteria within our GI tract, and why is it important to have healthy bacteria. And in my travels, I was with the Maasai tribe a few years ago, and they have a much healthier range of bacteria in the GI tract than what we do. So our westernized diet and westernized behaviors have actually eradicated a lot of bacteria.
So what you're saying is that the bacteria live in our poop, and that this bacteria is bioactive, that is, it makes proteins because it has DNA material, and that DNA material influences our body and becomes part of our body. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it has a lot of biologic activity in regards to the body. A lot of chemicals are released that may affect our brain. Certain immunologic diseases may be affected by the type of bacteria and the synthesis of different chemicals that they perform in our GI tract. Our ability to get different infections, like an overgrowth of something called Clostridium difficile, may be affected by the health of the bacteria in our GI tract. So if you think of like probiotics, the opposite of that may be antibiotics. And we have a prevalence of antibiotics. The bacteria within our GI tract help us break down food, protect us against the bad organisms, may help prevent obesity, may treat depression and anxiety. So yes, you're absolutely correct that these organisms have tremendous value in regards to the human. And we're just touching this in research right now, that maybe we can prevent or treat diseases by modification of our internal world, this microbiome.
So let me get this straight. There's good bacteria and bad bacteria in our poop?
Yeah, we have good bacteria and we have bad bacteria. We have, in certain diseases that we'll talk about, when we have more of a prevalence of one type of bacteria, we may be more prone to immunologic diseases. We may have too much Clostridium difficile and end up with a disease. We always think of lactobacillus and bifidobacter as the healthy bacteria, but there are bacteria that we want a predominance of the healthy ones and lower prevalence of the unhealthy bacteria within our GI tract. And a lot of different bacteria have different functions. So not all bacteria will have the same function. And we're going to talk about, hopefully, you know, how do we get a healthier internal world or microbiome that's so important to our health and longevity and wellness.
So how do we influence the bacteria in our gut, the bacteria in our poop? What can we do to change that and make it better?
Well, these trillions of organisms, 25 years ago, I didn't really think much about these organisms in the GI tract. We kind of ignored this microbiome. But our microbiome has changed a lot from our ancestors. And the proliferation of nearly fiber-free foods, processed convenience foods since the mid-20th century resulted in the average per capita fiber consumption. It's only down to 5 to 15 grams. When I visit a lot of these other countries, they may be taking in 3 or 4 times as much as dietary fiber. That fiber feeds your good, healthy bacteria. A high fiber diet, avoiding the processed foods, may be quite beneficial for that bacteria. The low fiber diets not only deplete this complex microbial ecosystem, which we have in us, this microbial or bacterial ecosystem, but can cause an irreversible loss in diversity. We think of different species around the world getting eradicated. One of the things that we've eradicated in the westernized diet, with the westernized diet, is a lot of diversity of this bacteria. So we will talk about, you know, as we get into this, why exercise is beneficial. What's that do to this microbial ecosystem or the bacteria within our GI tract? Fiber is definitely important. To give you a brief example of just one substance, and this was a study in Ireland, the Science Foundation of Ireland did this study, and they looked at only one substance, oatmeal. And what they found was oatmeal, you had healthier bugs or healthier organisms in the GI tract, and you had a happier heart. So oatmeal has something in it called beta-glucan, and that beta-glucan in oatmeal not only lowered blood cholesterol in the mice that they fed it to, helped keep down their body weight, but benefited the gut microbiome. And one of the things, there's a difference between the microbiome of a skinnier person and a heavier person. These are those organisms we're talking about that live inside us. So this oral oat beta-glucan, which is in all oatmeals, and especially the more unprocessed the oatmeal, the better. It had butyrate and things that produced by gut bacteria that help feed these bacteria. You're giving food to them that is extremely beneficial to them. And it's one of the things that we're going to explore to treat obesity is modifying this bacteria. And we'll talk a little bit more about neurologic diseases and Parkinson's and anxiety and depression. So, you know, exercise is one of the other factors that we want to get into. And exercise is extremely important in this. If we look at looking, I believe, at 40 professional rugby players, and these athletes had a significantly wider range of gut bacteria than the men in the comparison group. And the people with a high body mass index, or the heavier people, actually had the least amount of diversity. The athletes had a better metabolic profile. They had different portions of really good bacteria. They had a higher proportion of good bacteria, type of bacteria that we know is linked to lower rates of obesity and lower rates of metabolic disorders, such as type 2 diabetes, that are really prevalent in our population. So exercise is really important in regards to preserving this healthy microbiome. We've looked at a variety of other things in regards to healthy microbiome, but if you cut down on the amount of antibiotics, there's been studies showing the more antibiotics one receives, it may increase the risk of different types of diabetes, especially in mice. So it's a type 1 diabetic study in mice. You know, our diet, our lifestyle really makes a difference in regards to a healthy microbiome.
All right. What about, maybe you could explain to us probiotics. And there's also a term probiotics. What does that mean?
Okay. First of all, you know, I hate to correct you, but it's not pre-probiotics because there's probiotics and prebiotics. So a probiotic is something that you're going to buy in a capsule or have in your yogurt or your fermented food, and it may be several different types of bacteria that you may be consuming in that fashion and hoping that they're alive and hoping that they'll propagate in your gastrointestinal tract. Most of the populations that live the longest in the world, the Okinawans, the Sardinians, the Seventh-day Adventists, the Costa Ricans, do not go out and take tons of probiotics. Their diets emphasize prebiotics, which are mainly foods we were talking about previously, foods that you would ingest that feed the healthy bacteria in your GI tract. They exercise. They take in tremendous amounts of fiber. There's some debate on how do westernized cultures get a healthy microbiome. Endangered species often conjure up images of big exotic creatures, but think of endangered species that live inside our bodies, and we're endangering those by not feeding these prebiotics, these healthy fiber-containing substances to the bacteria in our colon that are well past our small intestine. So that's what these bacteria live on. Probiotics, again, would be things that you can buy or your fermented foods or other bacteria that we're going to consume, such as yogurt. I don't want to say yogurt with poop, but it's actually yogurt with poop organisms that you're consuming, which may be very good for you. But don't forget that the diet is more important often than you can't undo a healthy diet by just saying, I'm going to take a probiotic every day.
So one prebiotic that you mentioned is oatmeal. What are some others?
Any foods that you take in that have soluble fibers in it, or fibers or non-absorbable substances that are going to get through. So broccoli has sulforaphane, and so is cauliflower, and have very healthy substances for the body. But it also has fibers that are going to reach your colon and help these bacteria grow. Blueberries, blackberries, strawberries, every fruit and vegetable. There's no fiber in an animal, unfortunately. It might taste tough, but there's no fiber within an animal. And the higher the consumption of, you know, meat with the lower proportion of complex carbohydrates, the worse these bacteria may be. So you can really look at the plant kingdom for getting these fibers. You cannot look at the animal kingdom for getting any fiber.
Dr. Safdie, I've read that there's some experimental studies that the bacteria in our gut can actually help prevent diseases.
Yeah, that's true, Bill. And I think I need to emphasize again that these are preliminary studies for a lot of the things that we're going to be mentioning today in regards to prevention of diseases. But I can go through a few things that are interesting. Some of them just published a few days ago. First, you know, there was a study in mice, and a lot of our studies are in mice, or rats. And this was a study published at Mayo Clinic. The gut bacteria can cause, predict, and prevent rheumatoid arthritis. So mice, susceptible mice for rheumatoid arthritis, were treated with a certain type of bacteria, Prevotella. And compared to that, to a group that had no treatment, mice treated with that bacteria had decreased symptom frequency and severity and fewer inflammatory conditions associated with rheumatoid arthritis. Therefore, just adding one type of bacteria that may be a good type of bacteria to suppress inflammation in the GI tract may help. Again, that's an experimental study, as you pointed out. Let's talk about, you know, neurologic diseases. So there's a variety of things, and obesity and other diseases. Obesity is a hard one to study in humans because obesity in humans is multifactorial. But there was a study that was published that shows a link between the microbiome and the gut or the GI tract and Parkinson's disease. So there's been growing evidence showing a connection between Parkinson's disease and the composition of the bacteria in our GI tract. And there was a study at the University of Alabama in Birmingham that showed that Parkinson's disease and medications to treat Parkinson's have distinct effects on the composition of the trillions of bacteria that are made up in our GI tracts. So, you know, we will be looking at Parkinson's disease. Depression. There's patients suffering from depression experience a lot of mood swings, anxiety, cognitive type symptoms. And most antidepressants work by altering the neurotransmitters within our brain. So they work by changing neurotransmitters in our brain. But, you know, some advances in the field have linked psychiatric disorders to changes in the microbiome in our GI tract. So changing the microbiome in our GI tract may be a potential target for novel antidepressant treatments. Maybe we'll be treating this by changing the bacteria that live within us. And there was just a fascinating study that I read the other day that was published in the American College of Psychological Pharmacology. And it was a huge study that probiotics may help millions of people suffering from bipolar disorders. And it's an emerging field of research that explored the use of probiotics, often thought of as good bacteria, as potential new avenue of treatment of bipolar and other psychiatric mood disorders. So we're just scratching the surface of this. Unfortunately, it's a very new field. And I think we need to take care of the bacteria that we have. We need to exercise. We need to increase our fiber content. There's some debate about whether it should be a lower fat diet or not. But there's no debate about exercise, no debate about fiber, and there's no debate about we have endangered species living within us. As we change our diet, those species change.
Now, what about these bad bacteria? I mean, are we at risk of taking in bad bacteria when we take probiotics?
That's a good question. I mean, let's talk a little bit about probiotics. There's hundreds of different types of probiotics on the market, and I don't want you to think that they're interchangeable. None of the ones that I know on the market are made up of Clostridium difficile or other bad bacteria, or Campylobacter or Salmonella or Shigella or any of these bad bacteria that could reside within our GI tract. They're good bacteria, but most of the probiotics are different. Some of them are sent in a refrigerated fashion to you, and it's very expensive. Have a broader spectrum of bacteria and have many, many billions of bacteria. Some of them, which may be a very well-liked probiotic, may only have 1 billion and only of one strain. That wouldn't be my preference if somebody was taking those. So I do have preferred different types, but as we've said previously on our podcast, we do not recommend or endorse any specific products, but I like one that has many, many billions of bacteria with a significant diversity, because I really don't know what you're deficient in. But again, when we give probiotics, we're emphasizing the prebiotics along with that.
Should you ask your pharmacist if they have a refrigerated bacteria with multiple different types of species in it?
It's not a bad idea. You can look online. You can find ones that will be shipped to you. And it doesn't matter if they're out of the refrigeration for short periods of time. So if you're traveling and you have one that requires refrigeration and it's out for a day or two, not usually a tremendously big deal. But yeah, I think your point is well taken that one that's refrigerated, that's not shipped. What I worry about more is the shipping of these. Imagine a probiotic being shipped in the middle of the summer in a large truck, spending days to weeks inside a truck that may be well up into the 100 degree range or higher. And the viability of that bacteria may be markedly decreased. But we can also, besides taking pills, look at fermented foods, looking at kefir, looking at Greek yogurts, and other things that are going to have good, viable bacteria in it that are already refrigerated in some stretch. And remember, we don't have to get these organisms by a pill or by a powder. We can get these organisms by our diet, and we can make our bacteria healthier by our behaviors.
What about the yogurts that they advertise to have a large number of probiotics within them?
Yeah, most of those yogurts will have, you know, different bacteria after processing that are going to be added to it. So after processing and manufacturing, they may add back bacteria. Some of them, depending on how they're processed, the bacteria, the lactobacillus, the bifidobacter may survive the processing and not have to be added back into there, which I find, you know, comforting if you have bacteria that are going to be in your Greek yogurt, you know, your lower sugar content yogurts. I do not like the idea of yogurts that do not have a lot of bacteria in it. I think we should be really looking at the type of foods that we consume and emphasizing good, healthy foods, and probiotics and prebiotics are one element of a healthy lifestyle that we'll be discussing.
Dr. Safdie, thank you so much for discussing the microbiome. It's a complicated but extremely important topic, maybe part of the future of medicine. Many of Dr. Safdie's articles can be found at Telluride, LongevityInstitute.org on the web. That is Telluride, LongevityInstitute.org on the web. There's also a contact button that you can contact him. Dr. Safdie also gives courses on longevity. So take a look at the TellurideLongevity.org website, institute.org website, and join us for future podcasts.